Ladies and gentlemen.
Columbia.
You're listening to Pacific Town Sound Radio.
Hello, welcome to Pacific Sound Radio. I'm James.
I'm Travis.
Last week we talked to Ian Cromwell, the creator and host of Locals Lounge, in what will be the first of many appearances on our program in some shape or form. We're really excited to be collaborating with him, and we encourage our listeners to check out the next Locals Lounge event on February 18th.
All right, and our featured guest last week was singer-songwriter, visual artist Sam Hurl. She performs under the moniker Elf Pity as a folk artist and provides the vocals for the band Duck. We had a chance to listen to some live renditions of new material off of the upcoming Elf Pity EP, produced by PSR's very own Jaden Frace.
And if you want to listen to our last week's episode, you can find it on our YouTube channel at Pacific Sound Media and on our website at pacificsoundradio.com.
We got some current news for you coming up right now. And here it is. There is a hip-hop festival coming to Vancouver. You hear about
right.
that, James?
Yeah, I did.
Nice.
It's called the Breakout Festival. It's going to be held at the Peony Amphitheater. It will feature international headliners along with rising local talent.
And what's really exciting is it includes access to Playland.
Which is awesome.
Yeah. And hip-hop music.
Yeah, I mean, nothing better than watching a performance while on a roller coaster.
Yeah, just...
Probably drunk as well.
Upside down on the corkscrew.
I mean, sorry, drinking responsibly. Yes. We encourage that on our show.
There's an alcohol-free area.
Yes.
And that's important.
That is important because, you know, all ages.
Yeah. Super exciting. I mean, it sounds like Vancouver's building on the excessive events like Fade in the Park. And the lineup and ticket info is going to be out tomorrow at noon. So stay tuned for that. It's going to be real. Real, real.
Yeah. Real, real, real.
Real, real.
So the next little news piece we got is that the Prism Prize has revealed their top 20 finalists for 2018. So the Prism Prize honors the best Canadian music video, and the top 20 finalists will be narrowed down to 10. Will then compete for the top prize of $15,000, which will be awarded in May at the TIFF Bell Lightbox Theater in Toronto. And the finalists for 2018 include A Tribe Called Red, Always, local band Bellgame, Daniel Caesar, Feist, Leonard Cohen, Pup, and The Weeknd, among many others.
I hope the Bellgame wins.
Yeah, I haven't seen... I don't know what video they're nominated for, but...
Neither do I, yeah, but...
That would be good.
That would be very good. The Rio Theater is up for sale. You probably heard about that already.
Yeah, this is a follow-up of our piece from last week.
Yeah, but the operators of the Rio Theater launched a petition this week to complement the offer that they want to present to buy the building.
So the what they want to do is they want to use the survey results to become part of their pitch package. So to investors to purchase the rights to the property. The survey gives the public an opportunity to share their support for the theater and express their thoughts on why the Rio means so much to them. The survey deadline is this coming Tuesday, February 6th, so you can look for this survey on the Rio website at riotheater.ca/SaveTheRio/. We'll also be sharing a link on our Facebook tomorrow.
Yeah.
So one other detail that I wanted to bring up that dropped yesterday was very well-known Hollywood film director Kevin Smith contacted the Rio Theater operators over Twitter, expressing wanting to get involved in saving the theater and possibly doing some sort of fundraising event. So we'll definitely be sharing more details on that, because I myself am quite a big fan of Kevin Smith's early work, and him as a public character. It'd be cool to have some sort of celebrity presence involved in saving the theater.
Yeah, definitely. Thinking about that survey, one of the things they want you to share is your favorite memory of the Rio, right?
Yes.
What's your favorite memory?
Well, I would say seeing... I mentioned this last week, but I would say seeing the room for the first time with a live audience, because it's... because of the film and the cult following that it's developed, especially involving audience participation at certain parts in the film, like throwing plastic spoons at the screen. What? It was really the best way to see that film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, my favorite memory, I think, is going to the Valentine's Day burlesque that they do there every year. It's a really, just a fun show.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, they do a little bit of everything there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, yeah, and that's the major thing, is that this isn't just a community movie theater. This is a multi-use venue mm-hmm. that we don't want to see
gone.
Yeah, exactly. Know?
Keyword multi-use, not multiplex, right?
Mm-hmm. For sure. Okay. The next piece that I want to bring up was the article by John Cruz. I hope I didn't butcher that last
Johnny
name.
Johnny K.
Anyhow, called Vancouver Venues Band Together to Stay Afloat. So this is an interview with Wise Hall manager Jasmine Liddell, who is starting a arts collective to flag common problems found in the city's arts and culture scene. So in the article, Liddell highlights neighborhood noise issues, and especially how the high cost of living in the city hurts people's ability to support the art scene as two key problems that need to be addressed. So the idea is that they'd established this arts collective that'll come together and develop like a list of questions that they'd want to pose to those running in the municipal elections in October. So for city council positions and for the mayor. For anyone who's interested in joining this collective, they can email info@wisehall.ca.
All right, and we got your concert listings for this week right now as well. February 8th is going to be a pretty fun day.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the Friday? Is that the Thursday?
That is the Friday.
The Friday.
It's the Friday of the long weekend.
All right. Walter the 17th's debut EP release show at the Railway Stage. Rap hip-hop show. It'll be fun.
Yeah.
It'll be fun.
Don't see that often enough. And then we have Palm Haze and Washers are playing the Roxy. Palm Haze are cool. Want to have them on the show.
All right. February 9th, Saturday, you have Destroyer playing the Commodore. And if you don't know Destroyer, pretty cool band. It's got the front man is formerly from the New Pornographers, Dan Behar. Super talented guy. His Destroyer project puts out some really cool music.
Yeah, they've gotten a lot of attention in the last few years.
Mm-hmm.
The next one, you've got we'll both talk about this one. I'll let you lead on this, Travis.
Friend of the show, the rock and roll kid, Danny Svensson's band, the Aviator Shades, is going to be playing at the Railway Stage with guests Tokyo Blue and 9 O'Clock Gun.
I actually had a chance to listen to Tokyo Blue recently. They're a really cool band. They're a two-piece from Japan that relocated to Vancouver. They're super cool. They're experimental. And they sing in Japanese, which is also, you don't hear a lot of foreign language music, at least in rock spaces in Vancouver. So that sounds like a show to check out for sure.
Yeah, you got Zulu Panda and Sleepy Gonzalez playing at the Roxy February 9th. It's all February 9th right now.
Yeah, these ones are all February 9th. Mm-hmm. This is a big one, this next one. The Ex-Presidents with Mark Woodyard and DJ Matt Diamond at the Cobalt. Ex-Presidents are great. They're a fantastic local hip-hop crew. Their most recent album... name I can't remember at the moment, but their most recent album that came out last year is fantastic. Definitely worth a listen. I wanted to include it on our Best of 2017 list, but I just had too much good stuff to choose from. And moving on to the Sunday, February 10th. Actually, that'd be the Saturday.
The Saturday.
Or whatever.
Okay, just
February
put the days
10th.
A little bit behind.
Yeah, yeah. So February 10th.
You like metal.
The Saturday. Yes. Okay,
like
I'll talk.
Metal's metal.
Metal is metal.
Great.
Metal's great if you're into it. Mm-hmm. And I like it. So we've got a really good show for local metal fans. Ancients, Astrakhan, Brass, and Empress are playing the Astoria. It's going to be a happy and sad night. On the one hand, it's Empress's first show and EP release, but on the other hand, it's Astrakhan's album release and last show ever, mm-hmm. which is sad to see, but I imagine those guys will be... or probably have other projects on the go as well. So
yeah, I listened to a couple of songs off of Empress's EP that's not released yet, just on their Bandcamp, and it's pretty good. It's really accessible, you know. It's like, if you're not that into metal,
is it melodic?
It's guitar heavy, kind of think metal.
So yeah. Like Searing Leads. I'm just like, you're trying to describe it to me, and I'm just trying to think.
Think like kind of riff heavy, like just almost pop metal, just like
Oh, okay, yeah. So it's melodic stuff, yeah.
Okay.
Because if I had heard it, I would have been able to pick it up instantly. But anyhow, sounds like a great show.
Okay, big show at the Toast Collective.
Yeah, it's the Young Pilot release show with Perpetuity and Lamb's Breath. Mark from Lamb's Breath was just on a show 2 weeks ago. Definitely going to check that one out.
And Stella Soul is hosting their EP listening party with Gentle Mind, Ludic, and Jess Perkins at the Railway Stage.
And that is the concert listings for this week. Mm-hmm. So we are going to play our first featured single of the show, which comes from a musical collaboration of friends, old and new. The band is called Carmina, West Coast Soul. They draw from their collective hearts to create one sonorous voice. Their debut album, Speakin' Rhythms, is set for release February 9th. This is Roots.
All the leaves keep falling down on my front porch, and I'm thinking that it might be time to go. And the cold, it keeps me here behind blue eyes, only telling when it should be time to show. Every day I take my it sticks to me, I take it on, keep collecting into one judgmental stone. Could I go somewhere where I can feel the moonshine flow, and the sun would be upon me every day? Could I go somewhere where I can feel the moonshine grow, and the sun would be
We got
Matthew McConaughey in the studio with us. All right.
That's what I love about local music.
Is we somehow have bad impersonations of celebrities.
I keep getting older. Local music keeps getting better.
Very good.
Thank you.
So the next segment that we want to go over is the first installment for the radio show of Musician's Guide. So we tried this segment out originally as a mini episode when we started out as a podcast, and it was all the core idea for these mini episodes was to discuss some challenges of particular aspects of the music industry. Now, on our first ever segment, when we were still a podcast, which you can find on our website and our YouTube channel, was focused on building a band, but this time around we'll be switching gears a bit and looking at something that has not only began to flourish fairly recently, but is, you know, one of the biggest things in music right now, which is streaming. So joining us in the studio for this segment is our producer, Jaden Fraze. Hey, Jaden.
Hey. Hey. It's great to be here.
It is.
On this side of the glass this time.
Instead of just on Hastings Street.
For those who don't know, Jaden has been doing more of the survey work in the restaurant, but more checking in on our audio levels and stuff like that.
All that fun stuff.
Yeah.
The behind the scenes.
Behind the scenes. Mm-hmm. But he's...
behind the scenes, yeah, in our face.
We've torn the curtain, and he's there.
Now I'm
he's
here.
He's here.
I am here.
He's here. Mm-hmm. And what do you want to talk to us about, Jaden?
So I thought it would be actually really fun to discuss a little bit of music streaming. Some of the challenges that kind of come with that whole platform and that side of consuming music. So Spotify, YouTube, Apple Music, these are just a few of the platforms where consumers can pay typically a monthly fee to enjoy thousands of songs on their smartphones. And for listeners who may be unfamiliar about how these music streaming giants got their start, I think we have to go back a little bit to the early 2000s. I love the sound
effects.
Or
the late 1990s.
Or the late 1990s.
The very late 1990s.
Yeah. So this is when a music sharing service by the name of Napster began making its way through those college dorms for anybody who maybe couldn't afford to purchase those CDs or anything, or tapes, cassettes. They would share music online. And Napster allowed this to happen. Basically, Napster is an online service, or was an online service, that allowed users to share MP3s for free and also gain access to special material. So there'd be a lot of things like live recordings from, you know, different bands on there that users could share. Some even, you know, previously unreleased songs as well.
A lot of mislabeled stuff.
Mislabeled stuff.
A lot of Pearl Jam masquerading as Stone Temple Pilots and vice versa.
Yeah. All sorts of stuff. So only a few months into its start, the music industry started to take notice of Napster's ever-growing popularity, and so began the lawsuits. With so many questions regarding copyright and ethics involved in the ownership of music, Napster saw lawsuits from popular bands and artists, such as Metallica at the time. It's kind of the big notable one that sued Napster.
Yep.
I believe with them, their upcoming record that wasn't yet released leaked on Napster.
That was Saint Anger, I believe.
Yeah, yeah.
That's my favorite Metallica album.
Favorite? Yeah.
It is. It's the first Metallica album I heard.
It's well known.
Love that snare sound.
Yeah. It got me into Metallica.
It's certainly polarizing.
Yeah. As well as Dr. Dre also filed a lawsuit against them. And it wasn't until 2001 where Napster was finally actually forced to shut down.
Mm-hmm.
So fast forward to 2003. You all know that big company, Apple?
Heard of them.
So they introduced iTunes, which was another step forward, leaving CD players and Walkman in the past. The birth of iTunes and the iPod allowed users to begin purchasing music online for 99 cents a song. I believe full albums were about $9.99 at the time. And iTunes proved itself to be a successful business model for consumers who wanted to support their favorite artists and bands. So that was great. Along with the success of iTunes came the next generation of piracy, which featured some of our favorite sites such as LimeWire, FrostWire,
Pirate Bay. Pirate Bay is more for movies, but I can imagine you can get music on there as well.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, at the risk of infecting, you know, your own computer with sites of like LimeWire and FrostWire.
I mean, to be fair, I use my mom's computer.
There you go.
So
she kept getting malware on it, though. I mean,
all those viruses.
She always wanted to go to the mall. Figured, get her some malware. Just skip that trip.
She liked Greek
before
myth,
Amazon.
So.
I was way ahead.
So, oh, Trojan myth, Trojan horse. I'm sure she'd enjoy that.
Oh, gosh. So, you know, there's still basically that whole issue, piracy, but also you had iTunes, which was starting to make quite a bit of money off of having consumers basically purchase songs. And it wasn't until now 2005 where we begin seeing the modern day streaming platform, and this began with Pandora, a music streaming platform that made recommendations based on artists that users enjoyed listening to. So kind of inspiring what we see today. They had a subscription-based payment platform, so you'd pay a monthly fee, and then you'd discover all these new artists that were really closely related to, of course, the artists that you're currently listening to. And now today, this is where the whole music streaming platform and service has really evolved. And it's kind of interesting because you think after over, you know, a decade of evolving this music streaming service and having the ability to access all these songs nowadays, you think they'd get it right. But, of course, not quite. So music streaming services are in a bit of a predicament. I mean, it's allowed a new and exciting way for consumers to get their music by also paying a monthly fee and having access to more songs than, you know, you ever thought possible. But it isn't all unicorns and rainbows. Over the past decade, streaming services have found themselves in a lot of hot water, and what the industry's seeing as a big challenge is really how the services have set themselves up. So with artists not being paid enough for their music, and many legal battles regarding music licensing, the music streaming industry seems like a bit of a minefield. So my question to you guys is, you know, is there a successful formula where a music streaming service can not only keep consumers happy, but also artists happy and still make money? Is that even possible?
I mean, I'm going to give the giants like Spotify and Apple Music and some of the other players a little bit of going to give them a little bit of credit and a little bit of leeway here, just because they are so new. Obviously, there's going to be some kinks in the machinery, if that's the analogy I'm looking for. There's a lot of room for growth since it is so new. One way that they can approach it, and I'm going to reference a CNBC article that proposes how Spotify and Apple Music can pay musicians more. It's an op-ed piece. The idea that they propose is that Spotify and Apple Music could model themselves more as record labels, or even more so in a fashion similar to Netflix, where artists sign on with these streaming services and provide exclusive content on the websites themselves. Now, obviously with that setup, there would have to be a better give and take between the artist and the company itself. Mm-hmm. I'd imagine if, like, hey, I'm providing exclusive content for you that people can only listen to on your site.
Yeah. Right. Do you find consumers would have an issue with that if, you know, you have some of your favorite bands on Spotify, but others are on Apple Music? Do you find, would that be a kind of a bigger issue that would come up?
I mean, I feel like people are going to go to whatever one has more of the artists they like more, you know? Like, Chance the Rapper had a 2-week exclusive with Apple Music.
Right.
For $500,000.
So they would, but, you know, they wouldn't listen to, or they would find other ways to listen to some of their other favorite artists.
Yeah, and even then, you still have Spotify's free.
Right, yeah. So you do have,
like,
the free versions.
You can listen to it for free.
Right.
It's just not quite as good.
Yeah,
no, if we're talking about how they could change their business model, I feel like if everybody who used Spotify and stuff like that paid for it, instead of about, like, half where it is now, there'd be a lot more going towards it.
When it comes to exclusive content, I guess I'll clarify that a bit more. I don't necessarily see artists going, oh, well, I'm only ever going to release any recorded music I ever release ever on a set streaming service. I see it more kind of in the way that Travis pointed to with Chance the Rapper. I know Frank Ocean did something similar where he released a exclusive album in advance of Blonde. Can't remember the name of it at the moment, but he released an exclusive album on Apple Music as kind of this bonus content thing. So I see it more as if artists want to put out additional stuff.
Right, right.
And even then, like, the way this is talking about is those companies being the record label. So Apple could play Spotify music, they just have to pay the royalties towards Spotify too, right?
I see, yeah. So you're helping each other, but you're ultimately still giving consumers what they want on the platforms that they
want. Yeah, I mean, Spotify is going to get, like, a hundredth of a cent every time somebody goes to Apple Music and plays a song.
But, right.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's going to be happy that way.
So with that in mind, what do you think is next for music streaming? Do you think it'll continue to grow? Do you think it might dip? What are your thoughts?
You want to lead with that, Travis, or do you want me to jump in?
I don't think it's going to go anywhere for a long time. I feel like this is just about as easy as listening to music can be. I can't think of making it any easier, unless you had like the artist just show up at your house and just be like, hey, we're here to play this song.
Right. And so one other question for you. What are some of the biggest challenges when it comes to being an artist, do you think? Do you think those will grow or become more of an issue? Or do you think they will remain the same now that they're currently at?
You mean when it comes to having your music streamed?
Yeah, when it comes to having, you know, music streamed, obviously there's you have to either have an aggregator come in and... Basically,
you pay somebody to put your music on there, and then they get a cut of each stream.
Exactly.
Much.
Yeah.
And it's the same as having a record label do it for you, just solo.
Compensation's always been an issue.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Unfortunately, there doesn't seem to be a perfect way beyond, and this is one way I see this changing possibly, is I'm a huge fan of the site Bandcamp, which is designed more for smaller artists. But what's really great about it is how direct to the band it is in terms of compensation, where people can listen to the album, EP, singles as many times as they want on the website for free, but if they want to support the artist, they can pay directly through the website to get a download code for the album. Also, bands can essentially build in their own online web stores into their Bandcamp pages so they can sell exclusive vinyl releases, gift packages, other like artisanal cool stuff that bands, I think, is really how bands make their money nowadays, is having the best possible merch.
Totally.
Tied to another thing that I saw recently, the Melvins, legendary sludge metal band, been around for 30 years. Part of the reason why they've been able to be so successful is they create their own merchandise, including box sets, hand-printed vinyl, and stuff like that, all in-house. They, you know, charge like $35 per vinyl record, but it's because there's so much care and so much hands-on, handmade DIY energy that's put into it.
Right.
Yeah.
So I see maybe if Spotify or Apple kind of incorporates some more Bandcamp elements into it where the compensation's better for the artists if they have a bigger platform to sell their merch, for example.
Yeah, if we can just like backtrack a little bit about the future of music streaming, James, you had a really interesting point. We were talking about it before the show about kind of like just how iTunes and like music downloads and then... CDs.
Oh, yeah. Well, I was just... what I was commenting on is, isn't it crazy that... I think it's this year Apple decided that you won't be able to download music off of iTunes anymore.
Right. It's only the stream.
That's all that matters now. Which is really, really crazy when you think about it, is that... You know, it wasn't that long ago that they were saying, oh, downloads have killed CDs. It's all downloads now. Yeah. And now we've hit the point where, oh, streaming's killed downloads.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how long streaming lasts, I think. Just in the sense that, you know, even talking in a general sense, like, we see new technology so often, like, you know, every 6 months there's something new coming out, or even sooner. So,
will podcasts kill music streaming? That's the
artists are all moving to podcasts now.
Yeah. Will Pacific Sound Radio kill music streaming?
Probably not.
I mean, as long as it's not the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Speaking of which, hope you're tuning into the Super Bowl as well today.
Yeah.
One last question before we move on. Do you think the quality of streaming is a valid selling point anymore? Or is it more about the quantity? You know, you see things like Neil Young's Pono Player, which was all about, of course, having high-quality music on a listening device, as well as a streaming service like Tidal, which is now slowly kind of crumbling to the ground, despite the whole, you know, selling better quality streaming or better quality streams for a pricier point, though.
Yeah. Wasn't Tidal just backed by really successful artists already, though?
It was,
like,
yeah.
The thing is, they're like, oh, we're huge artists. We should make more money through this than the other stuff.
I will agree that the optics were a little weird when it came to Tidal.
Mm-hmm.
I guess when it comes to quality, that depends on the consumer that you're talking to.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And also depends on really what headphones you're using.
Yeah, my $6 well. Headphones, I'm not going to use Tidal.
You're just looking for that good song, and that's it.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm.
Just something lo-fi.
It's kind of like how you really only notice the remastering of an album if the original album didn't sound that great.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree. So, I mean, wrapping this up here a little bit, I mean, the ultimate way to support artists, of course, is
go see them.
Yeah, go see them live. But perhaps with some proper changes in the way music streaming services can operate, we can potentially see some more viable options for artists, especially smaller ones, too, to grow and make a living off of the music they create.
Well, and they're
if you go back to Tidal, like, you could stream live shows with that, too, right?
Right.
I mean, so, that would be the kind of work in there, as far as I can.
Yeah, totally.
You know,
and there have been strides to improve things. I believe it was a U.S. copyright court.
Yeah, recently sentenced Spotify and Apple Music.
Ordered. Yeah.
They actually had them raise the streaming music royalty rates. So you're going to see a larger cut, essentially, of revenue be handed down back to the artists once again, which is nice. So it'll be at least a 15.1% share of streaming revenues over the next 5 years, and that's up from a previous 10.5%. So good news for artists once again there, and hopefully we can continue to see that happen.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll make an extra $0.00074
yes.
a stream.
But ideally they'll figure out a way where artists are compensated more fairly. Which is the challenge.
The ultimate goal and always, I think, has always been the battle between artist and record label or streaming service in this case.
Yeah, I know. It's what? The top 10% of songs get 99% of the streams right now.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. And I feel that some of that depends on the artists themselves and just how they can navigate the system to their favor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just thinking of artists off the top of my head that were able to have long, successful careers making the music they wanted to make. They were never dependent on a record label to do the work for them.
Absolutely, yeah. That's very true. So, if you like this this segment, just wrapping this up here, let us know. To hit us up on Facebook, Instagram.
If you don't like it, just keep it to your fucking self. Just shut the fuck up.
Or just let us know anyways. And give us some topics that you think we should cover. Mm-hmm. We enjoy talking all sorts of stuff music. So, you know, if there's an interesting point that you you want to make, you know, it's what the internet's for, really, right?
Yep. You could message us right now and we'd read it.
Yeah, and we would read it.
Yeah.
Would we be sad if it was negative? Probably a little bit.
We'd probably read it on the air and call you out. Yeah. A little bitch.
Yeah, all right, here. So I'll let you guys take over again. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Jaden.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was fun. All right.
So coming up right now, we got another featured single. James, do you know anything about this featured single?
Yeah, this is the new song by Hey Ocean.
Mm-hmm. Coming up off an album that's not out yet.
Yeah, coming up on their new album that's coming out April 6, 2018. This is The Hurt of Happiness. right, and that was the latest single by Hey Ocean. So our featured guest this week is a man of many talents, an aspiring artist working under the moniker Lucius Blackworth. He is a recording engineer, producer, radio host, and much more. Please welcome Travis Dean to the show.
Hi there.
Hey. How are you doing?
Fantastic. How are you guys doing today?
Pretty good.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm. Pretty great.
Yeah, we heard you've been fighting a bit of an illness this week, so we're happy to have you taking the time to come on. Are you feeling better?
To be quite frank and honest, because I don't like, you know, lying to you guys and your listeners and everyone.
Appreciate that.
I still feel like complete absolute ass, but I mean, if Pink can still sing the national anthem with the flu, I can come on and do a radio interview. So
there
be
you
right.
go.
Yeah, absolutely.
There you go. Appreciate your commitment. So I guess the big one is just, you know, going back into your history. What's your background in music? How did you get your start? What were some of the first bands you joined and started playing with?
Oh, man, going back to the beginning. The original reason that I got into music was because of an awful breakup. I don't think I even started playing guitar until I was about 21. The girl that I was engaged to at the time, I came home one day and, like, all her stuff was gone.
Uh-oh.
There's a note on the table and, like, all the jewelry I had ever bought for it. And then I, like, moped around. I was super sad. And then I was like, well, I guess I better buy a guitar and transfer all of my woes into the musical world. So that's kind of how I got my starts playing guitar. And then I went to college for radio broadcasting. And after about 6 months of playing, I taught myself how to sing along with the guitar as well, and played my first show with my first band called Those Guys.
Cool. And I understand that you come from rural Alberta, Grand Prairie, correct?
Yeah, kind of, sort of, ish. I never actually lived in Grand Prairie all that long, but I grew up outside of Grand Prairie in a little place called Wembley, which is a small little country bumpkin town that has about 2,200 people in it.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. I mean, so if you don't hunt or like hockey, there's not a whole lot to do out there.
Besides drinking, but everyone does that.
Pretty much, man, pretty much.
Yeah.
Oil field and drinking, that's pretty much the Alberta way to go.
So did you start your first band in that town?
No, God, no. I didn't live in that town. I didn't play music at all when I was a kid.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I kind of got moved around and tossed around a little bit with my family moving and stuff like that, and ended up in Wembley Beaver Lodge and Hythe and a couple other places, like just little itty-bitty sub-pocket, like little hamlets outside of Grand Prairie. I started playing music when I got to college when I was just at 21.
Cool. And where's the college located?
The Grand Prairie Regional College is located in Grand Prairie.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So when did you make the switch from Alberta to BC?
2009. I went and did my radio broadcasting degree at a radio station in Calgary, way, way, way back when, I believe in 2007 or 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did that, and then I moved out of Calgary and got some of my first radio gigs in Edmonton, working for Chorus Entertainment, and then I was in a band at the time called Tripolar, who had just went through its sixth drummer in 1 year.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, man. It was pretty much the best thing ever. So it was kind of like time to move on from, you know, a place that had become kind of stagnant for me as mm-hmm. a musician, as an entertainer and stuff. So I applied for a job out in radio on Vancouver Island, out in Camel River, for a radio station called The River. The end of the ad basically said, say goodbye to winter forever. And being from Northern Alberta, I didn't actually think that that was a plausible thing in this country. So I jumped on that. They flew me out there and stayed in commercial radio for about a year and a half. And yeah, that's moved all over the island and eventually ended up over on the mainland here.
That's great. Coming from a small town and, again, moving around a lot and then finally making it over to BC, what were some of the challenges you'd faced as an artist, especially as a musician? Was a lot of it just dependent on the size of the community and just like the pool of talent or lack thereof?
Honestly, not so much. Like, finding a drummer is pretty much like the worst thing to try and find ever in any city. It doesn't matter
Agreed.
Where you're from, small town, big town. I've had no luck even finding drummers here. That's actually one of the reasons that I prompted me doing a solo project under Lucius Blackworth. I don't know, man. Like, on the island, it was definitely tougher to be a musician because you're kind of locked on the island. If you want to play a show in Vancouver, you got to play all the ferry costs, get all your gear over here, put yourself in hotels for the night, or find some couches to crash on. It's really expensive just to get off the island and play. And most of the island is pretty laissez-faire. They're all on island time. You know, it's a pretty relaxed environment. So at the time, I was playing fairly aggressive music. And there wasn't a huge, huge scene for that kind of stuff. And I fronted a metal band called Fall of Cain that toured the country a couple times, put out a record back in 2012, 2013. And kind of after doing that, you know, the band grew apart a little bit. For lack of a better term, they booted me out of the band because I was kind of a jerk. Mm. But, you know, that prompted me to get over here to the mainland. I went to Nimbus, started kind of doing things for myself, and looked at my album and was like, you know, for the amount of money that I put into this album and making this album and getting somebody else to make it for me out on an island, I could go to school to learn how to do kind of all the same stuff. And that's kind of what has led me on my current path.
Yeah. And I guess when it comes to, did you find that your experience with radio also helped when it came to your schooling for audio engineering and producing?
Honestly, man, like my experience in radio in general has pretty much made most aspects of my life better. Not only because, like, I worked in not only in a sense of just being an announcer, but I also like ran the radio station. I did the ads, did the production, and I really kind of fell into doing radio production and copywriting and ads and imaging and stuff like that while I was working in radio. And when you're kind of working in radio, you kind of gotta, like, the thing about like commercial radio and stuff like that is they are funded pretty much by advertising.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the times you have to go out there and be part of the community. You have to, you know, you really, really hustle and be that person that everyone kind of leans on as their entertainment facet for the each individual community. And I worked in a bunch of small towns, and it's one of the reasons I got out of commercial radio was that everyone knew who I was. Everyone expected me to be talking exactly like this all the time,
telling you
the weather, and then it was super cloudy. My favorite team was the Vancouver Canucks, and I love Bon Jovi. Unfortunately, that just isn't who I am. But in commercial radio, that's, you know, your station has a particular image, so
yes,
you kind of have to roll like that. So, I mean, doing things like this with like the online radio is really, really cool because you don't have to adhere to those particular boundaries and stuff like that that you would normally in commercial radio. But sorry, I'm digressing.
Oh, that's fine.
Going back to the whole radio and music thing, I think it really helped me a lot with promotions, being able to have stage presence. When I first started my metal band, when I joined Fall of Cain, when it was Deckard Cain, that was the first time I ever had to front a band. No guitar in front of me. I didn't have like that big prop in front of me to kind of fall back on and kind of hide all my nervousness and motions. And my first couple gigs were just like sat like clutching the microphone, shaking, being like, am I doing good? Is this okay? Meanwhile, I'm supposed to be like super scary and intimidating and confident and just literally none of that. So kind of digging deep into myself and kind of digging into my radio skills and stuff like that, and what I learned in radio was that sometimes you do have to just kind of turn it on. You have to be consistent. You have to be an entertainer. And when you choose to be an entertainer, whether it's music, radio, television, or anything like that, your audience and your fans expect a certain person, a certain caliber of entertainment when they're mm-hmm. listening to you. So it doesn't matter if you've had a bad day, it doesn't matter if you're sick, you got to get out there, you got to do it, and you got to make the best out of it, and you got to make people smile. You have to engage people all the time, and you can, you know, one of the biggest things I learned in music and stuff like that, and radio too, was never talking to the microphone like you're talking to radio land or you're talking to an audience. Always look at your audience when you're on stage like you're talking to that one person in particular and individually. You know, every person in that audience should kind of feel like you're talking to them specifically. And that was one of the things I learned in radio, and that really, really helped boost me up as a frontman, and has allowed me to do just a ton of stuff ever since. And for the most part, like, I'm, you know, an introverted guy with all kinds of you know, mental and social issues and anxiety and all kinds of stuff. But when I get on stage, you generally wouldn't know it unless you see me standing stationary, because then you'll see my legs shaking like a bastard.
Mm.
But other than that, you know, it's super cool. But yeah, radio really helped out with the confidence and stage presence for sure.
So nice. You mentioned that you... Sorry, did you want to...
Oh, I was just saying nice.
Oh, okay.
Nice.
You mentioned that, again, you had all this commercial radio experience, and then you moved to kind of what we're doing right now, the online radio. thing. Do you still have a show on Broken Neck, or is that something past tense?
It's honestly, man, it's kind of like I keep like meaning to go back and have my own show. I'm not going to lie. The older I get, the less angst is in me. Broken Neck Radio is very much, you know, our tagline is metal that makes you want to break shit. So it's you have to be aggressive. You have to be, you know, in the know of the metal all the time. As I've evolved as a musician and how I hear sounds and as a person in general, I'm just definitely not as angsty as I used to be. So the passion for doing a show like that all the time definitely isn't there as much as it was. I tried starting up, or rather there is a little bit of a show called The Frontlines that's kind of been trailing off, but it was supposed to be a monthly thing, and then it became a bi-monthly thing, and I think we're at like episode 4 kind of thing right now. And it's really, really interesting because I'm trying to do something that I had kind of done before, something that I had planned on, working with the independent community. Honestly, the biggest thing is the response from the independent community in Vancouver hasn't been that huge as far as like wanting to promote their own music. They've kind of got their own facets and styles, and it's been really, really interesting. So I guess, yeah, the circles I hang out in are different these days. So The types of musicians and stuff like that. But the metal community, man, it's one of the most beautiful communities in the entire world, especially here in Vancouver. It is one of the most like loving, empowering communities as far as music communities go, for sure.
I absolutely agree. From my perspective, just going to shows and stuff like that, I feel that the metal community in Vancouver is easily the strongest and most united.
Yeah,
to hear.
Absolutely. So that being said, and kind of on that kind of vein of doing radio stuff and kind of going the podcast route, me and a partner of mine are thinking about, or rather, we're just in the works of getting stuff together for a very, very spooky, spooky, spooky podcast, which is going to be called Spooky Toast, and it's going to be about all things spooky entirely, visiting spooky places and going to spooky things, and you know, finding demons and ghosts, and not quite in the vein of like being a ghost hunter. Because that's a little crazy. I've seen those guys on TV. They're a little nuts.
Oh, it's hilarious, but how seriously can you take it?
Exactly. But that being said, like, even just the Vancouver mainland itself, I mean, if you look at the history of, like, even just Victoria and the Empress Building, rather the Empress and the Provincial Building, and the spooky, spooky stories that go along with the guys that built that, and, like, there's murder and deceit and betrayal, and, like, Bastion Square, like, downtown Victoria is where they used to hang people all the time.
What?
Yeah, man.
What the?
Yeah,
so
there's, like,
I didn't even know that.
Yeah,
that's crazy.
Exactly. So there's, like, there's all this super, super cool, spooky stuff in and around Canada that, you know, for the most part, a lot of people don't know about or can't travel to, just because Canada is such a huge country. So yeah, we're hoping to bring that to people with Spooky Toast.
I think that's a fantastic idea for a show.
Thanks, man.
Are you looking to incorporate like a music element into it as well?
I don't think so, to be honest. I think it's going to be straight talk and podcast, minus the music that I put in there from my own production standpoint.
Yeah, of course. Kind of like what we've done, where Jane and I came up with our own music for
exactly. I think that'll be about as far as it goes. There's a lot of musical podcasts out there and a lot of music kind of associated stuff. And I like what most people are doing in and around my local area, and I kind of want to do a little something different and kind of veer away from the music side of things for a little bit.
Well, it also gives you an opportunity to engage with different people besides other musicians and promoters and producers and stuff like that. You have a chance to talk to like local historians and archivists and librarians and all sorts of people who know every little detail about Vancouver. And
yeah, absolutely. And when it comes down to it, like, I'm a huge, like, I want to call myself a history buff, but I don't know that much, but I find things like that super, super fascinating.
Yeah, I'm the same. The way my cheesy tagline about history is like, it's the coolest stories ever told, and they're all real.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
When it comes to what you're doing right now, are there any artists, producers, figures in the music business that you feel have served as a source of inspiration for you? Do you have any like specific mentor figures who helped you, you know, learn your craft?
Yeah, definitely. Especially with going to Nimbus, I met a few people that have really, really shaped how I think about music and how I perceive sound in general. One of those guys is Garth Richardson, Rage Against the Machine, you know, Rise Against, guys like that. And also in that same vein, his engineer, Dean Marr, was my instructor for about 8 months while I was in audio school. And that man has changed my life in pretty much every aspect, not just as a producer and how I listen to music, but also as a person, which I am, you know, eternally grateful grateful for.
That's great. Let's see here. Sorry, I completely lost the thought here. What do you know now that you wish you knew when you first began pursuing a career in the music industry? I imagine that you've learned a lot playing in a number of different bands.
Yeah, man. One of the biggest things that I wish I knew then that I know now is that nobody's going to come find you. You know, growing up, like, I was born in the mid-80s, and growing up through that particular area, you had, you know, all your bands like Motley Crue and Led Zeppelin, all these people with crazy autobiographies, and how they got signed after getting seen at this one club, and they got this huge advance, and they just became rock stars after that, and that's how you're going to make it, kid. You're going to be a star. That shit doesn't actually happen in real life.
Nope.
Not in today's day and age anyway, especially with the, you know, the complete dissolving of physical media for the most part. You know, I had a radio station just recently say, hey, we want to throw your stuff in our playlist, then can you send us a CD? And I'm like, man, who listens to CDs anymore? So that whole kind of aspect, and I wish people would quit reading Guns N' Roses autobiographies and you know, just thinking that you're going to make it and be the next big rock star without ever having to do anything. Kind of just like a luck of the draw when the music business was its most profitable. You know, they were looking for anybody to sign anything, kind of like what Netflix is doing right now with television mm-hmm. shows. They're just giving anyone a budget to make shows, and
yep.
some of them are just awful. But that's where the industry is right now, and, you know, they'll take it because at some point or another, it'll make them money.
Yeah.
And the music industry was kind of the same. So I wish I would have known then that all this, you know, that particular mentality was on its way out. Actually, one of the reasons I started in radio was because I didn't want to be that guy that was, you know, 45 years old playing in a club, hoping to get noticed, which most people are. You know, they end up in a cover band, they end up in some blues band playing, you know, a couple weekends a month kind of thing. But, you know, their rock star dreams and dreams of being a musician are far and faded kind of thing, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I wish I would have known then that that it just wasn't going to be like that, and I had to hustle a lot more than I did. The really, really cool thing is that since I've been in Vancouver and, like, going to audio school and stuff like that, the network of people that I've had the opportunity to speak with, chat with, and learn from, I've gotten more accomplished in the last few years as a DIY artist than I had 10 years previously, just kind of hoping I knew what I was doing kind of thing, you know, so...
And when it comes to that especially, do you feel that you were able to make a lot of really valuable connections through Nimbus?
Oh, huge, man, huge. Nimbus is the greatest school that I've ever seen in my entire life, and so far that I'm still connected with them. It's not every day that you can have the guy that produced Pink Floyd's The Wall come down and critique your music.
Yeah, that was Bob Ezrin, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
And albeit, like, it's not always the best things you want to hear when you have a rock star producer being like, this is awful, you need to switch this, your voice is doing this, and what were you even thinking here? And, you know, everyone wants to hear the praise, and everyone wants to get that pat on the head and be like, your music is the best. Because as an artist, we all think our music is the best, regardless of what it is. If we did
it, the blinders.
Yeah, man, it's the best thing ever. Having that opportunity was really, really crazy. And, like, even just the network now, like, if I have issues in the studio or, you know, pretty much in any facet of my musical life or engineering life, there's people I can call, there's people that I can lean on, there's people that I can get in touch with to help solve the issues that that might be at hand. And, you know, at the end of the day, being an engineer isn't about really what you can do. It's more how you can solve problems and work around the things that you can't fix.
Absolutely. I realized that I hadn't properly framed the question. We kind of alluded to what Nimbus is, but give us kind of a rundown of Nimbus, who they are, why they're so great. Especially for someone who wants to get into engineering and producing.
Yeah, absolutely. Nimbus School of Recording and Media is a audio and media school here in Vancouver, BC. It was started back in 2008 by Garth Richardson and Bob Ezrin, and has since grown to the point of, you know, incorporating more aspects of media with video production courses and live sound courses and post-game and audio production courses. So as far as everything audio goes, it's pretty much like the go-to place as far as I'm concerned in North America. And not only because you have a star-studded cast of instructors and mentors and just people ensuring your success, you also have, like, again, it comes down to the network. The network there is huge. Everybody at Nimbus is like a family. It's like a really, really, really tight Italian family that, like, for the most part, like, if you need anything done, man, you got Tony over there, and he can help you out. And it's really, really cool that way. It's a place that embraces and, you know, really, really encourages everything that you do, even though sometimes it's super, super weird. We just got our picture taken.
Yeah, we are totes awesome.
Internet fans.
I hope that
now.
Goes viral.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can quit my job and make that sweet YouTube money.
Right? It's all about the YouTube money.
Unless you do something really stupid.
Yeah, and even talking about, like, the music industry and that stuff, too, and, like, looking back to your previous question of what I wish I knew now, it's like, even the YouTube money. You know, people talk about the YouTube money and the Spotify money, and everyone thinks that just randomly happened. All you need to do is just have that one crazy thing that goes viral. It's like, nah, man, all these people worked at it. Like, they busted their asses for so long and so hard to get to this point. It's like, yeah, that one video took off, but they also did 100,000 videos before that. You know what I mean? So, yeah, one of the biggest things is just really, really got to work hard. And that's, going back to Nimbus, that's one of the things about Nimbus is you're in a place that embraces working hard, but everyone is in the same mindset. Everyone is working 16 to 20 hour days, grinding to do the best that they can in what they love. And it's just a super, super cool place. And the culture is what kept me coming back and what kept me there. And like, even now I work there during the day. And then I work at my studio, the other half of the week kind of deal. But yeah, it's a phenomenal place. I'd recommend anyone that's looking to get into audio engineering, production, video production, anything like that, to definitely go check out the space. I mean, they've got a studio that's a theater room that mixes in 5.1 surround sound, with this crazy S6 console that has like theater seating. They just took over. What was I'm umming a lot, I apologize.
Oh, that's fine. I think we're still doing that too. So
it's one of those things, man. It's one of those things. But yeah, they took over what they call LMA, or Old Little Mountain, where like a lot of early 90s rock records were made. Bon Jovi, Motley Crue, AC/DC, list goes on and on and on. But a lot of these early 90s records were all made at this studio called Little Mountain Sound, which later, I believe, became The Factory, and then was Garth's Rock Space, which is rehearsal space. So they've recently took that over, they've gutted it, and they're just in the middle of restoring it to its original Studio A glory, back when it was Little Mountain Sound, where, you know, people like Metallica and Bon Jovi and all those good folks recorded. So super, super cool vibe. And it's, you know, and most audio schools that you look at too, like, you'll have the chance of using maybe one console over the course of, you know, a month or a few weeks, where this place has like every type of console. It has everything you could possibly need, and you have access to it 24/7,
which is just so cool.
Absolutely.
Now, you know, one thing that you touched on when it comes to playing in a band is, you know, really it depends on how hard you work, and really that can apply to like anything that you aspire to be really good at. What other things have you kind of learned about, you know, just being in a band, being in touring bands, what works, what doesn't work, what you feel bands as a unit kind of need to overcome when it comes to achieving the best possible form of success for themselves?
Dropping egos is a huge one. One thing that my mentor told me when we were doing a single with him was, you know, I asked him kind of about the band and what his particular thoughts on it were, and he said, could you spend 6 months in a van with these people? Straight, constantly. No breaks ever. And it was like, man, I can barely get through like a week of practicing with these people, you know, let alone 6 months in a van. So that's a big thing, man. Like, if you want to make it as a musician, if you want to do, like, there's obviously two sides to it, right? You can be a recording artist, you can go for that YouTube's monies, you can, you know, do playlists and Spotify stuff and all this crazy stuff that's out there and streaming music and never ever play a show. And be super successful if you know how to do it and you work for it. The other side of that is the live performance musicians that have to tour around the country, have to tour internationally in order to get their name out there and to find those particular niche markets which their music is for. So in doing that, yeah, you really, really have to look at the people you're with and say, hey, like, can I go across Canada with these people in a dark, sweaty, smelly van, and can we still be friends afterwards? Can we be family afterwards, you know? And working through problems and just staying healthy is a big one. Everyone wants to be a rock star. Everyone wants to get super loaded at the end of every show and drink all the money that they just made at every single show. The reality is that professionals don't do that.
Yep.
You know, we have a few drinks out in there. I say we because I'm like totally propping myself up as a professional right now. but yeah, like the reality is like you have one or two drinks, you know, you sip on them the entire time you're there. You do have your drink with your fans, you mingle, you engage, but at the same time, you don't want to be getting loaded after every show. You don't want to be taking, you know, going to the after party at 4 o'clock afterwards, because you got to be up and you got to be ready to go. You got to be on the road, and you have to be mentally and physically able to continue to do that for weeks on end. And if you, especially if you're using your voice as your moneymaker, then you don't want to be screwing that up because you decide to get drunk and hoot and holler all night, right?
So. Mm-hmm. For sure. I think before we get into our next batch of songs, we'd love to hear something from Lucius Blackworth.
Cool. Cool. I know everyone out there can't see it right now, but for this particular occasion, I bought a capo because acoustic musicians have capos. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to use it for anything. I'm going to put it on the top of my guitar so it looks sexy. But now I feel like I'm finally legit, so I'm just going to put that on my guitar and grab it, and I'll be right back.
Sounds good. It is a blue capo, which I feel like it's important to mention. Blue is a good color.
Yeah, blue, metallic blue.
Metallic blue.
Yeah.
Did you get that near here, or
on what's the that, way? Sorry?
Where'd you get it?
This capo?
Yeah.
Amazon, bro.
Yeah.
Yeah, internet's taking over the world, man. Mm. I don't have to go into stores anymore and talk to, like, real people. It's just... Amazon is the best thing that's ever happened to my life.
Yeah.
It's like an eBay where I don't consistently get ripped off.
Yeah, it's weird. At the Apple store, you don't even have to talk to anyone. You can buy it online, just take it and leave.
Really?
Yeah.
What?
Super weird. Yeah, you can buy it on your phone, grab it, go. That's it.
That's amazing.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, awesome. I mean, they've been talking about, like, grocery delivery services and stuff like that. I think we'll get to the point where there will be so many service jobs that just won't exist because everything will be so automated.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the way of the future. Like, even if you look at Vancouver's economy right now, like, the Lower Mainland, the island, a bunch of places like that, they used to have a very strong trade community of, you know, mining, and, you know, there was lumber mills and all kinds of stuff and all these different mills and yada, yada, yada. But now, like, Vancouver itself, I think, is about 75% service-based jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way we're going. You know, all the manual labor and all the things, the tedious things that we don't want to do as people, that really just destroy our lives for the most part, are going to be automated. They're going to be done by robots. They're going to be done by programs and algorithms. So you can either fight it and hate on yourself and be super depressed that the world is changing, or you can accept the fact the world always changes, embrace it, and, you know, go find another avenue to work in, kind of thing. But,
yeah.
But yeah, it's super, super interesting looking at the economics of a place like that, because in a service-based area, it's like everyone's trying to work for everyone else, kind of thing. It's a really, really weird way to go about things. But I'm super stoked because that means that I'm going to have, like, Will Smith, iRobot, like, robot body parts within the next 5 years, and it's going to be so
cool. Oh, that's the dream.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
And just wait until people are able to get designer augmentations.
Dude, I am so stoked for designer augmentations, like, so stoked. I will be a volunteer for implants and to get dropped off on Mars. Like, I don't even care, man.
Yeah. So, what's this first song you're going to play for us?
What do you guys want to hear? I'm releasing an EP in a couple weeks here. Actually, 10 days. Today's the 4th, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, it's happening on the 14th, which is also my birthday. So instead of expecting gifts and presents on Valentine's Day, my birthday, I'm going to give something back to the people, which is my EP.
That's wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely. So it'll be available on Bandcamp for free, and I'm pretty sure it'll be available on iTunes and all the streaming services for their 99 cents.
Oh, so this won't be the one that's already up on Bandcamp right now, then? Yes? No?
I don't know. Is it up on Bandcamp right now?
Well, there's a 3-song EP with your cartoon on it. Or Lucius's black cartoon.
Okay, Bandcamp, if you're listening to this, we need to have a chat, bro, okay? Because that wasn't supposed to go live, okay? But, yeah, so if you want to check out Bandcamp, apparently my EP's there right now. Go check it out. It's sweet. So this first song is called Superhero, and it's about mental health issues. And, yeah, I went through this relationship that was really, really tough, not only on me but the other person as well. And it's kind of about having to be very, very near and dear to somebody that does have mental health issues. But despite your best attempts in trying, sometimes you just can't help people, and sometimes people need to take that leap to help themselves, and do nothing but, you know, really, really, end up hurting the different aspects of your life because you end up blaming yourself for what this person is doing, when the reality is it's not my fault, and it's also wasn't her fault. You know, she couldn't help the things that were going on. So this EP is very near and dear to my heart, and kind of follow along with that stuff.
Great.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the first time that we met? Such a hero to me. I don't regret the time we spent together. I should have known this wouldn't last forever. Why are you screaming at me? I don't know what I did or how I'm supposed to be. Why are you screaming at me? It's just my love you can't see. Tried to give you everything I had. Yes, I was listening. I can't do this. I have to let you go. I have to learn not to hate myself. Why are you screaming at me? I don't know what I did or how I'm supposed to be. Why are you screaming at me? It's just my love you can't see. Myself. Why are you screaming at me? I don't know what I did or how I'm supposed to be. Why are you screaming at me? It's just my love that you can't see. Why are you screaming at me? I don't know what I did or how I'm supposed to be. Why are you screaming at me? It's just my love you can't see.
Yeah, that's it.
That was great.
Thanks.
That was superhero. And you said that was a first song off your new EP?
Yeah, that's the first song off the EP called Inside My Eyes, which I'm going to be completely honest with you, gentlemen. I just threw that name on there. It has absolutely no connection to the EP whatsoever, but it needed a name.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. It's a good title.
I think so. Yeah, I think so. I don't know if it has any actual significance at all.
Yeah.
I'll make up stories as the interviews continue.
But. There you go.
How many songs are going to be on the EP?
Just three songs on this EP. Yeah. And again, kind of going back to the state of the music industry and stuff like that, it seems most people, listeners and stuff out there, have an attention span that goes for about 5 seconds. And most people don't listen to albums anymore anyways. You know, unfortunately, the whole concept of an album is kind of dissolved. So I'm going to release this EP, and then I got another EP that's due out in April. That's going to be another three songs, and then a couple singles as we go here and there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's a very... That's certainly a good way to approach it. The way I kind of look at albums is they're like movies, whereas like EPs and smaller releases are kind of more like TV episodes. Now, that's kind of a clunky analogy, but I guess you...
Yeah, no, you're totally right on that. If somebody's only there to watch a 20-minute episode, you know, having them sit there for 2.5 hours while you tell your story is, you know, not really what the current listener of today's day and age mm-hmm. is looking for, you know?
Yeah. Well, I always found... just even as a listener. Now, don't get me wrong, there are albums that are like an hour plus that I really genuinely love, but I find the sweet spot for a lot of artists is like that 30-minute to 45-minute range if you're going to put out an album.
Yeah, absolutely, and I kind of feel the exact same way. I mean, like, my EP is like 12 minutes, so it's kind of like, it's either like I put one more song on there, I might as well go for the full album and just make it like 7 or 8, 9 songs totaling that half hour to 45 kind of minute mark. But yeah, when you're looking at like an hour and 16, it's so much different too. And it's really, really interesting looking at it. Like if you look at the history of an LP and like an album, and then it went on cassette tape or it went on a record, the amount of space to put songs on a record or a cassette tape or a Betamax tape was always finite.
Mm-hmm.
So you could only put so much on there, and it never really mattered how much material you had. With the introduction of digital compression and MP3s and all that kind of good stuff, all of a sudden you can fit a lot more time onto a CD, and it's like, oh, my CD's full. Well, I'm just going to turn this into a DVD. Oh, that's cool. Oh, what? That's full? Man, I'm just going to upload all that shit right onto the internet where everyone can grab it, and, you know, you can have a 58-minute song be the first song on your EP. And I'm really actually surprised it didn't go that way, at least for a little while, but it really just seemed to, like, once people had that capability, people were like, yeah, I'm cool.
I mean, the only band I can think of that really went kind of, as you said, the 58-minute song, that really ballsy route, was Flaming Lips. I believe they did a 6-hour song and a 24-hour song, because of course they did.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely don't have the attention span for that, so I couldn't listen to that. So I think they did
it more for themselves.
Well, absolutely.
Just to say they did.
Yeah, and that's an important thing as a musician, as an artist, too, is to realize kind of, are you making music for yourself? Are you making music for other people? What's kind of your goals there when you're looking at writing a song? A lot of other projects and stuff that I've been in, my previous band I was in called Princess Kenny, we were a rock band, and then Not a Chew Die before that, also a rock band where I was fronting and playing guitar and singing. And like a lot of that was, it was for us, but also a lot of it was for, you know, we wrote songs for the people, so the people can have fun while they listen to those songs. Whereas this particular EP, Inside My Eyes, is more just, I wanted to write it, and this is kind of what came out. One of my buddies listened to it from Edmonton. His name is Billy Shake, battle rapper, shout out. He listened to it, and his first response was, wow, that is really weird. Just because it wasn't like anything that I had done up until that point, and also because there's some spots on it. Have you listened to it? Did you listen to it yet?
Only listened to Superhero.
Yeah, the other two songs have like weird, crazy bridges. Like Superhero's cool, but it's probably the most like song-like song that doesn't have this like minute and a half long Radiohead bridge where it's just me making like weird vocal noises and adding shakers and weird guitar lines and some synths and stuff.
I definitely need to go back and listen to those two songs.
yeah I try and like when I do an EP, when I produce it, engineer it, or as an artist, I really try and make my EP kind of as the same structure as a song. So the first song is always going to be the introduction. The second song is always going to be like the pre-chorus, or the chorus, depending on how many songs are on there. And then, you know, next song, chorus. And then I want to have like a bridge section on my EP where it's something completely different and introspective compared to what the rest of the songs on the EP are like. So generally for something like that, I'll do like a 5-song EP just so I can get the full up and down story. Generally I try and structure my EPs like that. And even when I'm mixing, when I'm recording, when I'm editing, anything that I do is going to be from that front to back every single time. I don't like jump around from song to song. It's like, work on this one, I work 1, 2, 3, 4, and I kind of have the orders set out well in advance, even before I start recording, just so I can kind of get the vibe of how the record's going to go.
Yeah, and you recorded this all in your own studio?
Yeah, absolutely. I recorded this at Unbiased Media out in New West, which is my own recording studio, where you guys have done a couple episodes from.
Yes.
But yeah, this is also one of the first EPs that I've ever done everything myself. Except for there's a song called When We Fall, where the guitar line on that was done by a good pal of mine. He used to play in a band called Dead Rivals. His name is Carlos Sepe. I hope he's listening. If not, man, you need to get your shit together. But yeah, other than that, everything that I did was completely on my own and by myself with all my own resources, even to the point of mastering it myself, which is, if you dabble in the audio world, mastering is like this weird mystical mm-hmm. beast that, you know, you're not supposed to really touch and always send it to somebody for the other ears. What's up, bro? What's up? Man, this is a great spot for mm-hmm. to do a broadcast, man. So many people are just wandering by and filming you, and it's like, they have no idea who we are, but we got microphones, so we look super cool.
I know.
Man.
We really need to get a sign.
Absolutely.
Just to the windows.
Well, I think the plan is, I can't confirm this, but I heard rumors that they were planning on having speakers outside. Not necessarily playing in the restaurant, but at least broadcast live to the streets.
They definitely should.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, man. Have you guys ever been to Toronto and seen like the Much Music like Chum building?
No.
Oh, I haven't.
You've seen it on TV though when they've done like their random like I'm not sure if they still do that anymore, but like
the big glass wall?
Yeah. When I was on tour back in 2013, I got the opportunity to stop by there. It was nighttime, so it was all closed and in security, so I couldn't break in or anything, but it was really cool because like the whole entire studio was just forefront for every single person in Toronto to see, and it was super cool. And like I remember watching Much Music as a kid and watching them do like random little concerts there and stuff, and just watching the streets gather up with random people for free concerts and stuff. And so yeah, if you guys could get something like that going here, that'd be sick.
Yeah,
do that for sure.
I'm really excited to see how this develops, especially come summertime. I think there's plenty of opportunity to do outdoor events as long as they run it properly.
Absolutely. What are they doing with Tent City over there?
Oh, I don't know.
I mean, that looks like, yeah. I mean, with no tents in there, yeah. It looks like a great place to hold a show.
Or like an alleyway or something. Yeah,
we'll figure it out.
Yeah, we'll figure something out.
No doubt.
We'll
pitch it to
Mark Brand, who I hope is listening, but he probably isn't because he's super busy.
Just
but
set up
love,
in the kitchen.
We love you, Mr. Mark Brand. But I think the other plan that they're looking to do is to have people in the butcher shop area play as well. Because they're planning on turning the butcher shop into a brewery, I think. Again, this is what
I've
heard.
Butcher shop gone brewery.
Yeah.
Bold moves. Meat mm-hmm. for beer.
Yep.
I don't know how I feel about that, honestly.
Turning the butcher shop into a brewery?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it makes sense for Vancouver, for sure.
Yes.
There's more people here that drink craft beer than eat meat, for sure.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yep.
So, your EP.
Yeah.
You did it all yourself. What would you say is the hardest part? Or for you?
The hardest part for me was keeping perspective.
Yeah.
And also keeping, like, the mentality and the vibe. Like, when I wrote it, I was at a particular place in my head and mentally when I wrote the EP and when I recorded it, when I mixed it, I was kind of in that space. Some super awesome, amazing things happened, and this amazing, beautiful goddess of light and darkness walked into my life. And all of a sudden, I'm not, again, quite as angsty. I'm not quite as sad anymore. And, like, I consider these songs pretty kind of pretty and kind of sad. But that's definitely not where my headspace is at anymore. So kind of finishing off the mixes and trying to travel back to that particular mindset in order to finish off what I need to do was probably the most difficult part. Everything else was just, keeping at her and also committing. A lot of the songs on the EP, they have shakers and some extra guitar lines, and When We Fall has me drumming on my guitar just because it was like, oh, I'm the only person in this band. I can do whatever the hell I want all the time, which is really, really liberating. If you guys haven't got the chance, definitely go into a studio and just create everything yourself. But yeah, keeping this perspective and keeping the vibe and the mood I was trying to capture was probably the most difficult part. Mm-hmm.
When it comes to the most recent music that you've been putting out, especially since you've played in a number of different metal and hard rock bands, what artists did you kind of draw inspiration and influence from when it comes to this new material?
Honestly, Rise Against, as odd as that sounds. The first time I ever heard a Rise Against Hero of War, it made me cry. Like, the emotional connection coming from that song. And that song was so stripped down. There was one guitar, little bit of, like, marching snare comes in at the end and stuff. But for the most part, it's just guitar, just vocals, and it tells a story. And that story is so emotional and is such a journey that I really wanted to try and capture something similar to that. when I was writing these songs and when I was putting these songs together, I wanted to have something that was emotional, something that was a journey, something that told a story, not only lyrically but also musically. And that's what I'm saying. Like when you look at the bridges in a couple of the other songs, they're very dark and moody comparatively with the rest of the song material. And it's kind of creepy at times, but when you're in, you know, a particular mindset or place, when you're in a relationship where you're dealing with things like emotional and verbal abuse and things like that from your partner, you can go to some pretty dark places, and your partner can go to some pretty dark places. So I wanted to capture that on a musical side. So there's not really, like, in those parts, there's not really a whole lot of lyrics. I wanted you to feel what I felt, not be told what I felt. You know what I mean? So, yeah. When I listened to Rise Against, that particular song, that really, really hit home a lot with how I wanted to do this EP. And oddly enough, too, like some Jack White stuff, and just kind of like letting it go. I mentioned a comparison to Radiohead, which is weird. I don't even listen to Radiohead, but for whatever reason, they inspired me on this particular record as well, which I think is pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. It's like Radiohead to me is like one of those bands where it's kind of like Metallica, where I'm not like the biggest fan in the world, and I've never really like bought a bunch of records, but they're so prominent in the musical world that you've heard them 1,000,000,000 times in various different iterations and stuff like that. And the song "Creep." That probably sticks in my head as one of my most influential songs, not just like for this record, but like as me as a musician, just like the somberness of that particular song followed by a ch-ch-ch-ch-ch, and just that chug on the guitar. I was just like, that's what I want my life to be like all the time. That's my inspirational speech.
That's awesome. So you did mention your studio in New West, Unbiased Media. How did that come together? Because you were working with Nimbus and then kind of branching out more on your own.
Yeah, that's a super interesting thing. I'm like, I'm a pretty old fuck, so I'm glad you guys are streaming radio, because I would totally be kicked off commercial radio right now.
Oh, well, that's kind of the joy. We can say whatever the fuck we want.
Right?
Whatever the F we want.
Whatever the fudge we want. Let's keep it clean. Family show. So when I was at Nimbus, like the general kind of comeuppance, I guess, of an engineer is that you start as an intern or a runner, and then you work your way up to assistant engineer, and then you're an engineer, and then eventually you can become a producer, and then after that you can become do whatever you want, blah blah blah. People have to take 40 years to do that, which is great. Being an intern is super cool if you have the resources available to you to be able to survive in Vancouver. Vancouver's a super, super expensive city to live in, and the fact that I already had a life, I had bills to pay, I got a dog to take care of, all these other things did not allow me to do those 15-hour sessions at, you know, a fairly low wage, running up that interning side, and which is unfortunate, but also kind of fortunate. Like, unfortunate in the sense that I had a lot of opportunities offered to me that if I would have put in 2 years into that, I could have been working with some of the biggest names in the music industry right now. But I kind of went to become an audio engineer so I didn't have to work for other people and I could kind of do my own thing. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where Unbiased Media came from, is that a place where I can set my own hours, I can set my own rates, I can work with the bands that I want to work with, and I can help support the local community. That's probably the biggest thing for me is being able to offer rates that are affordable to the local community. Anyone can go to a studio for, you know, $500 to $1,000 a day. Not everyone can afford that. So having a studio out in New West, doing everything myself, doing the production, engineering, you know, just having everything in-house that I'm capable of, allows me to cut a lot of costs in a lot of different areas, and allows me to offer, an incredibly awesome and amazing product to my bands and artists and stuff that I work with without breaking their bank, which is one of the biggest reasons that I wanted to do that, because I've been that person. I've been the starving artist. I've been the struggling musician. And you can be sitting on the best songs in the world. If you don't get them recorded, you don't get them out there, nobody hears them, it doesn't matter how great they are.
Definitely. Would you say, again, because of your varied experience, did the role of an entrepreneur come naturally to you? Or is it something you just kind of realized where you're like, I don't want to work for someone else. I got to figure this out on my own.
I've been in a few entrepreneurial roles in my life and a few like business management roles where I kind of got to run the show and do things. When I was doing radio in Port Hardy on the north end of Vancouver Island, I was the only one there. I had a radio station completely sold in myself. I sold the advertising. I did the production. I did the announcing. I did everything. It was amazing. It was super awesome and fun. Granted, that was, you know, my radio station was owned by somebody else. But it really kind of opened my eyes to, oh, like, I'm fairly productive when I work by myself and do my own thing. But yeah, I've always wanted to be an entrepreneur. I've always wanted to do my own thing. I used to call myself an anarchist in my punk rocker days. I'm not so much anymore because the reality is that people will, you know, always corrupt each other, and somebody will always fail, and some man in power is going to screw everything up for everybody else at some point.
Yep.
But yeah, so working for corporations and just the way business is structured these days just really isn't my jam. It's soul sucking. And as an artist, like, you need to be able to do something that allows you to be creative all the time. If you're doing things as a day job to make money, that's cool because it's helping you further your art. But at the same time, if that is taking away your mental capacity for creativity, then it's all for naught. It's really setting you back and not pushing you any farther ahead. And it's like, it's great to pay your bills and stuff like that, but at the same time, you still need to be able to create art, because the last thing that we want to do is look back when we're 50 and look at that day when we remember our dreams dying.
Yeah.
Yeah. On that note, do you have another song for us?
Absolutely. You guys want to hear another sad one, or do you want to hear a happy one?
Maybe a happy one to counteract that, me thinking about being 50 cool. And hopefully not being sad.
Sure, man, sure. This one is not on the EP. Yeah, I'm just going to have to move around.
Oh, it's okay. Yeah, the so wires and stuff like that. It's cozy in here, that's for sure.
It absolutely is cozy in here. I love it in here. Cool. So this song is called Nice to Meet You. I might have to make up the second verse on the spot because I think I've sang it about 4 times at this particular point, but it's a little bit happier. Musically, it's still a little dark, but lyrically, it's much happier. It's about new beginnings instead of endings and falling and all that kind of cool stuff.
Wonderful.
It's nice to meet you, like the color of your eyes. It's nice to meet you, I like the way you move your thighs. I gotta remember how to play this, just give me 2 seconds here.
It's all good.
See, this is, ladies and gentlemen, if you want to do good on a radio and on an interview and as a musician, rehearse. Don't forget about the time that you're supposed to go perform in front of a bunch of people on microphones until like 3 hours beforehand, and then practice absolutely nothing, because this is what's going to happen to you. It's nice to meet you, like the color of your eyes. It's nice to meet you, like the way you move your thighs. It's nice to meet you, think that we should meet again. Where? Nice and dark, where I can test your skin. It's nice to meet you. It's nice to see you. I'd like to see you again and again. Oh, it's nice to meet you. It's nice to see you. The knife emoji means more than just friends. Every little thing you are,
Something changed that night when we were driving in my car. And if I could say I like you the way you are, wouldn't change a thing about how you are. It's nice to meet you. It's nice to see you. I'd like to meet you again and again. Oh, it's nice to meet you. It's nice to see you. The knife emoji means more than just friends. Do you think it's dead? I don't wanna go back. Do you think it's dead? I don't wanna check. It's nice to meet you. It's nice to see you. I'd like to meet you again and again. Oh, it's nice to meet you. It's nice to see you. The knife emoji means more than just friends.
All right. That was good. Great. Mm-hmm. And you said that one's not on the EP, but are you planning on releasing that at a future point?
Yeah, that one's going on the next EP that is scheduled for April.
Cool.
Yeah.
So, kind of getting to our last batch of questions, sadly. From what you've observed working with a number of different artists in a number of different genres, are there specific approaches that you feel best aid an artist in their path to be successful, like across the board, regardless of, you know, what they're playing or doing?
No.
There's no one?
There's no across the board anything, man. Music is such a subjective thing. Being an artist and creating art is such a subjective thing, not only to the person that's perceiving the art, but to the person creating the art, that honestly, like, any time that you try and use a blanket approach to things, that's when it's going to kick you in the face and be like, and just fall to shit and be like, oh man, what do I do now? Because this has been working with everybody else, so I tried to work it on this guy and it didn't work. Mm. So really, like, everything has to be taken as a completely separate entity. Like, it's the first time you're ever trying these things. Like, you know, I these SM7s that we're using right now for our radio microphones, these are great microphones. They are great all-around microphones. I use them on almost every possible sound source I can all the time because they're great. I had a female rapper come in the other day, and I tried her on my Neumann. I tried her on my SM7. I tried her on my HKG C414. Nothing. Her vocals just did not sound great on any of those things. And these are all my blanketed go-to kind of microphones that should sound good on most things. It wasn't until I pulled out an Audio-Technica AT4040 that I found something that complemented the harmonic range of her particular voice. And, you know, she didn't do a lot of singing, but she did have some melodic aspects to her rapping and to her rhyming and her bars and stuff. And it was really, really interesting because, like, even to the point of, like, even the tools that you use, you can be like, oh, I use these SSL pres or these Neve pres for everything. And all of a sudden, those SSL and those Neve pres don't work. All of a sudden, what works best? Oh, well, this stock preamp that comes with Universal Audio Apollo kind of thing. That's what works best. So when it comes to, like, blanketed ideas, I feel like you really have to listen to the song and the art itself and decide what is best for that particular song before you approach it. And then if you feel like that particular area that you've decided is best, yeah, there's some probably, like, different techniques and stuff that you could use in different genres. But as far as something that's just kind of across the board, I really don't think that people should approach music like that. I think that everything should be looked at like as its own separate monster every time that it's brought to the table. I mean, again, there's a couple things that you can do. You know, what works well for hip-hop? Well, making sure the bass is really loud when your clients are in there, that really works well. Making sure they can hear your sub, that makes people happy. You know, when you're dealing with rock and roll, like, you want to have tight drum sounds and, like, screaming stereo guitars. But, like, I tried approaching my EP with stereo guitars because, you know, I'm a rock guy. That's what I do. And for a lot of the times, it just wasn't... That wasn't what was necessary at that particular time. So, and that was actually something interesting about making this EP is a lot of blanketed techniques that I used to kind of apply everywhere. I basically had to throw them all out the window in order to do this other thing because I was finding that my blanketed approaches weren't working. My advice for that stuff would be, you know, make sure you figure out what serves the song best and really listen to the song, listen to the art, and try and see it through the artist's eyes before you make any judgment calls on how you want to actually approach that music. But just from a production standpoint, play to a click, understand what pre-production is. If I could give any advice to any musician, artist out there, engineer, producer, like, tell your artist to play to a click, get them to practice to a click, to a metronome, weeks before coming into the studio. It will save everyone, artist, producer, engineer, everyone a bunch of headaches, and pre-production. Make sure that you have figured out what your song parts are before you get into the studio. That doesn't matter what kind of band you are, what kind of artist or genre that you're working with. Do your pre-production, listen to the songs, hash them out, tear them apart, put them back together, do what you got to do, and have those ideas set in and practiced and well rehearsed before you get to the studio. And going back to that whole concept of, well, you know, Led Zeppelin wrote these three songs while they were in the studio. Yeah, they had a $15,000 budget per day too. Like, no, we don't have that.
Yeah.
So be well rehearsed, be prepared, and be consistent.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, just an addendum to that. Mm-hmm. My initial question, I guess I should have clarified, I was kind of more talking about business practices, but I imagine it's similar in that, like, you can't approach marketing yourself as a rapper as the same way as a metal musician.
Nah, obviously. It's not entirely true. From the business standpoint, man, everything is a product. Everything needs to be marketed. Everything needs to be sold. You can have the crappiest product in the world. If it's got good marketing, it'll sell well.
It's
best
true.
Product in the world with crappy marketing won't sell at all.
Yeah.
You know, look at some of the most far-fetched bands that we like, and we look at a lot of the times the commercial success that this band has had, and it's nothing compared to Bieber, because Bieber had marketing.
Yep.
You know, like, same thing with Tragically Hip, one of the greatest bands ever, weren't really successful outside of Canada. Mm-hmm. And part of that was because of, you know, lyrics and people not knowing what the hell he was talking about, because it was so much Canadian reference.
Yeah, stuff. Bobby Orr.
Exactly. But at the same time too, it's you know, the marketing to get them that international exposure just wasn't there the way it is for a lot of the other giants that are out there. So any advice I would have on the business side is hustle. Learn as much as you can about business and entrepreneurship and marketing and understanding how to engage a fan. Somebody taught me a little while ago, and it was something that really kind of stuck near and dear and is kind of the focus for my whole set of new projects that I'm doing. I'm also... working with another act that we're using this kind of similar approach to, and that is to just really, really make sure that you're well prepared and that you know exactly what you're going for. You know, making art is cool, but if you're making art for yourself, cool. The business side of it doesn't matter. You're just making it for yourself. But if you want to turn it into a career, you have to treat your art like a business. You have to treat it as such. You have to treat it as a product that needs to get out there, that needs to be sold. And you need to understand how to engage people. And the thing is like, if you have 1,000 fans that buy your merch, that buy your songs, you put out a single every single month for 99 cents a pop, and you've got 1,000 fans that all buy that song every single month, you've got $1,000 income. Coming, minus your fees and your blah 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 and your overhead, but if you have 1,000 good fans that are just buying your songs at 99 cents a pop, there's $1,000 a month. You get those 1,000 fans to also buy t-shirts once a month or every couple of months, all of a sudden you're growing and growing and growing. And understanding that from a small scale perspective and looking at what you need as far as a niche market goes, and not trying to market to everybody. You know, not spreading your net too wide, because at the end of the day, a lot of those people don't want to hear your music. a lot of those people don't want to hear your art because, again, art is subjective. So, and that's great. You know, if you get rejection, if you get people saying, oh, man, your music sucks, I hate you, feel good about that because you're weeding through and you're finding out who your true fans are, and you will find them. You know, there's not a thing on this planet that somebody isn't going to find interesting. You know, whether it's murder or the church or you're trying to find solace in, you know, just drinking yourself in the bottom of a bottle, it doesn't matter. You can write about whatever you want. You can make art about whatever you want. Somebody is going to be able to connect with that. And if your art comes from your heart and you write from personal experience, other people are going to have those experiences too. No matter how much we think that we're super amazing, unique, and everything that happens in our life only happens to us, that's not the reality. Stuff that happens to us happens to tons of people out there, too. So if you can get yourself to a point where you are actually engaging those people and connecting with that small group and audience as opposed to trying to, you know, get the Bieber fans, get the Beyonce fans, and get this huge, you know, pop star market of music fans, which, you know, is pretty unattainable in today's day and age. But you can still make a good living for yourself. You can still do what you love, be able to support yourself, and feel good about it. Be your own boss. Make your own hours. Create what you want to create. Do what you want to do, but maybe not on a, oh my God, I'm a rock star famous kind of level. So a lot of that would be like, yeah, like getting off your horse and like get into reality and realize what you need to be, what you need to be happy and successful too. Because at the end of the day, if you're grinding all the time, you're marketing all this stuff, you're doing all this stuff and you hate it, and it's not making you happy, what are you doing it for? You know, and if that's where you're at, pay somebody else to do it. You know, get somebody else to do it so you can focus on that, but understand that that's going to come at a cost as well. You know, you're going to have other hands in your business. You're going to have other people calling the shots for you and doing the things that they think are best for you as opposed to what you think are best for you. So everything comes at a cost, but in today's DIY world, man, there is not a single aspect of the music business that is not reachable from an average everyday artist. We have access to everything. We have access to all the fans in the world. We have access to all the best marketing tools. We have access to publishers and, you know, resources like SongTrader that get your music placed. You know, even just in BC, with Music BC here, they throw seminars and all kinds of little workshops for people that want to get into music and publishing and syncing and all kinds of different aspects of the music industry. So if you're willing to learn and you're willing to devote that time in there, there's nothing you can't do. But be realistic about what your goals are, and understand that it you know, is likely that you can become very sustainable and that you can live off this and do what you want to do. But you're probably not going to be flying around a $52 million jet in your 20s. You know, those people happen, but again, it's by fluke. Mm-hmm. And if you see those people 10 years later, they're not happy about the choices they've made generally, shaving off their head and shit and being all weird and, you know, making weird YouTube videos, eating hamburgers. Poor David Hasselhoff.
all excellent advice, all very wise words. It's a shame that we're rapidly running out of time, but I just wanted to ask you a quick few rapid fire questions about how people can connect with you and what you're doing in your music.
Absolutely.
So how can bands and artists get connected with Unbiased Media to book studio time?
You can go to unbiased-media.com. And you can find my website there. All my contact information is on there. You can also, you know, give me a quick search on Facebook under Unbiased Media. New West, I got some likes, so I might pop up. But yeah, if you want to get in touch with me, best way is probably through the website, unbiased-media.com. Yeah, that's probably the best way for that stuff. And then for Lucius Blackworth and all that good stuff, again, that is all over the socials, the Instagram, it's all under Lucius Blackworth. Twitter at @L_Blackworth, and then on Spotify it's under Lucius Blackworth as well. Apparently my EP is up on Bandcamp, so you can go there right now and pick that up. And then after that, on the 14th of February, it's going to be available on all major streaming services worldwide as well.
Where are you hosting the release show?
I'm not having a release
show. Oh, I thought you were. Okay,
my bad. Definitely not. No, honestly, man, I thought about it, but with the release being when it is, I actually have to go in for surgery like the day after.
Oh,
and shit. I'm like literally down and out for like an entire month. Recovering, so it was kind of like I could push it and not get the surgery, or if you like waiting on the medical system in BC, and you can push it back for another 8 to 10 months, that's cool. But I think the release show will be probably this spring, this summer, when I do my next EP.
Fair enough. Yeah. Final question, because we like asking this to everyone before we hear one more song from you, because we'd like to close out the show with one more song. Are there any local artists or bands that you would recommend we bring on to a future installment of Pacific Sound Radio? Now, we don't really bring on hardcore punk or metal bands, because that's kind of a separate show on the channel, but any other bands?
I would recommend I'd recommend a couple people, actually. I would recommend that you guys bring on Heroes of the Damned, which is one of my favorite super secret bands right now. The guys wear masks, and they just play with LED lights, and it's basically just drums and bass, kind of like Death from Above, Royal Blood kind of vibe.
Oh, cool.
They don't have anything released as of yet, but they are in the studio right now working on that stuff, and it's super under wraps because I guess like because they wear a mask, they don't want anyone to actually know who they are, so they don't promote themselves, which is a completely different monster as well. So if you're using like a gimmick or something like that that you got to do, you got to kind of approach the business side of things differently. But yeah, I definitely check out those guys, and you know, there's tons of great music in the city. My good buddy Jordan Hart just got back to town. He's working with Chin and Jetty right now. If you guys have the opportunity to get him on the show. He is an absolutely phenomenal artist, guitar player, singer, songwriter. Yeah, if the Dead Rivals ever, you know, come back to life, I would recommend getting them on. That's kind of my jam for right now.
Great. Yeah. These are some great recommendations. Yeah. I hadn't actually heard of actually all of those. So.
Cool.
Yeah,
sweet.
That's great.
Excellent. Excellent.
So I guess we'll hear one more song to close out the show.
Sweet. This song's going to be weird.
I like weird.
Well, if you guys noticed too, I totally forgot to bring a string today.
No.
That's how much of a mess I am today that I didn't even bring all my strings for my guitar, Jaden.
Just noticed that now.
This is Jaden's fault. I'm totally blaming this on him.
Thank you.
cutting in there a little early, but
thank you so much,
Travis. So we're going to do our quick outro here.
All right.
Okay, thanks for listening. We're your hosts, James Olson and
Travis Noel.
Pacific Sound Radio is produced by Jane Fraze. If you'd like to learn more about where to find us, give us a like and follow on
Pacific Grand Radio. We're on Facebook, Pacific Sound Radio, Instagram, Pacific Sound Radio, Twitter, Pacific S Radio. You can listen to the live show every Sunday, 4 to 6 on SaveOnRadio.com, YouTube, Pacific Sound Media, and our website, PacificSoundRadio.com.
Tune in next week, Sunday, February 11th, 4 to 6 p.m., as we chat with Synth Pop Rockers Plus guests. It's been a lot of fun, guys. Have a good night.